Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers all over Earth, on planet, off planet, or welcome here. At X Squared Radio, we're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. New location tonight. Outside, it's 45 degrees and clear, full moon coming on strong. If you want to be part of the program tonight, you can do so by dialing in at 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. Those of you that are stepping out for the evening, be sure to dial us in on your cell phone and listen in Bluetooth, 712-432-0075. And then dial the access code 318-116-pound. We have two guests on tonight. Len Kasten, author of The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. You know him, longtime writer of Atlantis Rising magazine. Fantastic book, and this is going to be a great interview. And then in an hour, in our second hour, we've got Dan Willis, disclosure witness, coming on with us to join us and you. The solar wind today was 393 kilometers per second with very high proton density, 12.4 protons per cubic centimeter. This is the highest we have seen it in many years, so be careful out there, especially at high altitudes. So there are no sunspots facing Earth today. Earthquakes, heat waves, floods, volcanoes, super typhoons, blizzards, landslides, and droughts. Sound familiar? These killed at least a quarter of a million people in the year 2010, the deadliest year in more than a generation. More people were killed worldwide by natural disasters this year than have been killed in terrorism attacks in the last 40 years combined. Climate scientists say Earth's climate also is changing thanks to a man-made global warming, bringing extreme weather such as heat waves and flooding. The excessive amount of extreme weather that dominated 2010 is a classic sign of man-made global warming that climate scientists have long warned about. They calculate that the killer Russian heat wave, setting a national record of 111 degrees, by the way, there was one in Los Angeles too, would happen once every 100,000 years without global warming. So if you don't think it's happening, hey, look outside. The lunar eclipse of December 21st, you know, this is the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere. Is this rare? It is indeed, according to Jeff Chester of the U.S. National Observatory, who inspected a list of eclipses going back 2,000 years. Since year one, I can only find one previous instance of an eclipse matching the same calendar date as the solstice. That's December 21st. We're exactly 2 years before the end of the Mayan calendar. The last time this happened was in 1638, says Chester. Fortunately, we won't have to wait another 372 years for the next one. If you decide not to go out tomorrow night after midnight, 1:30 a.m. Tuesday morning Eastern Standard Time, you only have to wait until the year 2094. Trust me, there's nothing on the silver screen worth watching that you don't that would take you away from seeing this eclipse. It's going to be very cool. Everyone in the Northern Hemisphere, everyone in North America should be able to see it. tomorrow night, 1:30 Eastern time, it begins. It goes pretty fast. You can watch the shadow of the Earth cross the moon. Also to note, there's very little particulate in the atmosphere right now. So that old adage of the moon turning to blood, if it happens, it's going to be something other than our atmosphere that's making it turn that color. Go out tomorrow night. Get you something interesting to drink and watch it. It should be fun. There were only 32 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, 8 over 5.0. None were over 6.0. Don't forget, you can get your copy of Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com and purchasing there. That gets you the autographed copy and the audio version for free. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Or you can buy it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, blah, 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 everywhere else, about $3 or $4 cheaper. Whatever's of value of you, that's to you. That's what I'm saying. Don't forget to prepare for this winter as you head out in your car. We've already had a couple of terrible storms in the Midwest. Go to our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com. Put a survival kit in your car and be safe. Take care of yourself. Tonight, our guest on X Squared Radio almost needs no introduction, Len Kasten. He is the author of one of the best, and I think it is the best book I've ever read on UFO history and the secret history of extraterrestrials. That's what it's called. He is a longtime writer for Atlantis Rising magazine. He is a former member of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomenon and the Mutual UFO Network, and he is the president of the American Philosopher Society. And you're going to love this book. I highly recommend it. We're going to talk about it in a few minutes. 40 seconds. Don't go away. We'll be back with Len Kasten on X Squared Radio.
Space travel.
All right. Welcome back. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Again, we're coming to you live from Mississippi. We'll be coming to you from for the next couple of months down here as we continue our work. Welcome to the program, Len. How are you?
I'm great, Brooks. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I've read a lot of books about UFOs. I mean, there are a lot out there on the shelves. I got to tell you, from the introduction on, you had me hooked in this book. Your writing style, the way that you put this together, the way you list the facts. You say something on page 3 that just draws you in. It says, "It is slowly dawning on us that the world we see around us is a cleverly designed illusion and that we have been expertly manipulated to believe it to be reality." I thought that was amazing. So tell me how you came to the idea that you're going to put all your thoughts in one book and get it out there. How did this happen?
Well, folks, I had written 52 articles for Atlantis Rising, of which these 26 were all on the UFO phenomenon. And in talking to Inner Traditions, they realized that the 26 articles covered a wide area and really were more than just a compendium. They really had a narrative drive. So they decided, we all decided to put it together into the book, and I think it worked out nicely. The other 26 articles are on various New Age subjects such as life after death, sacred geometry, the Casey research, Atlantis, and so forth. So, but that's a whole different bag. These articles are extraterrestrial related, and they were written over.
Well, the thing I like best about the book and about your writing style is the focus on chronology and how this really tells the story from about 1946, 47, in chronological order, right through to the present day. And you know, I'm not a super big enthusiast in the sense that I read everything I get my hands on, but everything that I've seen and other speakers that I've seen at conventions where I've spoken, It's kind of jumbled up. This is so well organized. I was just really, really impressed by it.
That was my goal. That was my goal, was to be organized. That was my goal.
Well, actually, I appreciate it.
Even so, a lot of pieces of it have still been left out. But I did the best I could with what I had, with the time that I had and the space that I had.
Well, what's interesting about this genre is we meet specialists in certain areas, or lifelong, you know, people that are dedicated to one aspect of it. And what you've done is you've pretty much covered it all, not as the primary investigator, but as a consolidator. And you've really done a good job of bringing everybody's story together into one work. And you begin this with a section called Part One, and you begin it with contact. Let's talk about contact between alien races and human beings here on Earth, modern Earth.
Okay. Well, it's a long history, as I'm sure you know by now. It didn't become apparent until Roswell, really. Roswell was really the seminal event of what I'm calling the Galactic Age, and that's really where it started. But of course, there were other
contacts really
prior to that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you really have to be a believer that Roswell did happen or it didn't happen. And if it did happen, it is really the first time that whole alien craft landed by accident on Earth and were confiscated.
Right. And the fact that it did happen has been supported by some very, very impressive people, including Edwin Mitchell. Mitchell has said without any hesitation that it did happen. And since he's from Roswell, he grew up there, he knows all what he calls the old-timers, and since he has terrific integrity, I think I would tend to believe Ed Mitchell. So,
I know Don Schmidt really well.
Yes.
And, Don Schmidt and his partner have gone up there and interviewed literally hundreds of witnesses. I think they've done, you know, such a great job of getting to the people that are now beginning to pass away because of old age, and documenting all of these interviews. They've just done a fantastic job. I'm convinced that the event did happen. Now that we're convinced that it happened, how did it really change the face of believing or non-believing that we are being visited from other worlds?
Well, of course, it was kept under tight wraps for 30 years. I mean, it wasn't until Jesse Marcel gave that interview with Stanton Friedman in 1978 that it started to really come out. But Marcel kept silent about it for 30 years. He didn't say a word. So it took a long time. And why he did eventually talk about it, nobody really knows. I guess he wanted it to come out before he died. So.
Well, some people don't want to carry stuff to their grave.
Yeah, exactly. And what Ed Mitchell said himself, he got the information from the old-timers who wanted it known before they died, and they chose him to be the spokesman.
Well, you couldn't have picked a finer person. I mean, Stanton is just, he's got the credentials, I know him personally, and I can tell you he would take no artistic license with anything anybody told him, and I think he made a great spokesman for Jesse to come out and interview with.
You mean Friedman? Stanton Friedman?
Right.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, yeah, and I have a whole chapter in the book about Friedman. He's quite a remarkable character. I call him the Don Quixote of ufology. Because he's been tilting at government windmills for over 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. And to have somebody come out of nuclear physics, which is my area of expertise by way of education, certainly not by way of career, but Stanton and I have a lot in common there, to come out of that science and into you know, the bold science of going around the country, literally thousands and thousands of appearances saying UFOs are real, is pretty bold.
All over the world, actually, not just the U.S. He really is a one-man crusade. And that's why I thought he deserved a whole chapter, especially since he really investigated the Magic 12 document and over a 10-year period absolutely proved that it is genuine. So for all those reasons, I think we should all be listening to what he has to say. And especially since he was invited into the vault at the Battelle Institute, where they kept all the Blue Book statistics. So he saw the statistics with his own eyes. And he knew that out of 3,000 sightings, 600 were unexplained. That's when it hit him. That's when he realized that the government had been deceptive about it.
Well, it isn't just the U.S. government, is it? I mean, just every government. It doesn't matter if it lands in Bolivia or Iraq or Israel. It doesn't matter. The government moves in and antiseptically cleans the area right down to the cotton swab and tells everybody nothing happened here.
Well, you know, I think I made a point in the book, especially in the introduction, to showing that some of it was justified militarily in 1947 because of what happened with Operation High Jump. Are you familiar with that, with Operation High Jump?
Yeah, Operation High Jump was a full-scale invasion of Antarctica post-World War II with battle-hardened troops, battle-hardened ships, right at really the peak of post-World War II military readiness. So this was no ad hoc, you know, group of tourists that went down to Antarctica.
Exactly.
So tell us a little about what they experienced.
Well, according to the documents I've read, there was just a 20-minute engagement where flying saucers came out of the water. They sank the destroyer Murdoch. They killed 68 sailors. And the basic message was, don't come to Antarctica with weapons from now on. So when the military realized that they were up against flying saucer technology in 1946, actually, High Jump was late 1946 and early 1947, and Roswell was only 3 months later. So when a saucer crashed into a hillside in Roswell, the first reaction of the military was that it might be related to our Antarctic debacle. And they went on full alert, especially since they were dealing, it was over the 509th Bomb Group, which was the Atomic Bomb Delivery Group. So they had every right in the world to be suspicious that this was a military invasion of some sort. And that was their first reaction. Then when they found the bodies, of course, it all changed.
The thing that I find interesting about the sequence of events there is that the craft that were encountered during Operation High Jump ostensibly were acting only in defense. When fired upon, they would fire back. But once the U.S. forces ceased fire, they ceased fire as well. The second thing is that those craft down there may have been manned by humans. And the ones that crashed at Roswell were of a different construction, and they were certainly not manned by humans. So would you say that they're related?
No, they were not related, but it explains why the military reacted with such elan and immediately assumed that they might be connected. When they found the alien bodies, of course, they realized that that wasn't the case. But then a whole different kind of caution kicked in at that point. But at first, I think they thought there might have been a connection with Antarctica.
What was the scope of the Roswell incident? Was this one ship that just, you know, smacked the ground and flew into a bunch of pieces like a weather balloon, or was this multiple ships over multiple locations?
I think all the investigators have now come to a consensus that it was two ships, that two spacecraft collided. And apparently they were from two different civilizations. The one that crashed northwest of Roswell was, they believe, what's called the Greys. The other one crashed near the town of Dayteal, which is in the plains of St. Augustine, which is about 90 miles west of Corona. The first crash was right near Corona. The live alien, there's a debate as to whether the live alien was found at the Corona site or at the Dayteal site. But one alien did survive both crashes. We don't know which one it was. And he was kept as a guest of the government for another 5 years. So that's what we know. And I think everybody pretty much agrees now that there was a collision. Apparently there was some very sophisticated new radar technology being tried out by the military at that time right there. And it was also a terrific lightning storm. They think it was the pulsed radar that brought down the craft, but it could have been a combination of the lightning and the radar. But the military knew that they had been trying out that radar, so they might have made that connection right away.
Interesting. I know that particular location was also the location of a group, a military group, that had been selected to deploy nuclear weapons. Do you think that was a coincidence?
To deploy, you mean our people? When you say deploy, what do you
mean
exactly?
Our military base, that particular base, was chosen to deploy the first nuclear weapons in combat. Do you think that was a coincidence?
I don't think it was a coincidence. I think the alien interest in that base was for that very reason. It makes perfect sense that in so many cases down through the years, the aliens that we have spoken with have all said the same thing: get rid of your nuclear weapons. It happened right from the 50s with the Adamski meeting, as well as many others. They all join in that same chorus. We want you to get rid of your nuclear weapons. So this is a subject of great, great concern to the aliens, and apparently to all the aliens that are visiting Earth at this point, not just one group. Are you familiar with the Eisenhower meeting?
Well, it brings up a lot of good questions. I said it brings up a lot of good questions. I mean, if you're visiting and you realize that really the only weapon that could lay waste to any colonization that you plan to do on a planet would be nuclear weapons, it would make sense that you would advise the people to get rid of those weapons. Do you think the military figured that there was an ulterior motive besides promoting world peace for us to get rid of those weapons?
Are you familiar with the Eisenhower meeting at Muroc in 1952? Do you know that story? But I am.
But let's go ahead and tell the listeners about it.
Well, supposedly they were from one of the human star systems, humanoid. Like I think they were from the Pleiades, but it's not certain. In any case, they looked pretty much like us, and they were very similar to the aliens that had met with the so-called contactees in the 50s with Adamski and Howard Menger and Van Tassel. And all they wanted us to do was to get rid of our nuclear weapons. In exchange for that, they were willing to give us some very, very exotic technology that would help us resolve all our energy problems, all our health problems, and literally create a paradise here on Earth. And they had the ability to do that. And apparently Eisenhower there was a lot of contention among the ranks. The generals just didn't like the idea of giving up nuclear weapons, and basically, they had to say no thanks. That was the deal. That was the deal at Muroc. And that
what would be
meeting was accompanied
by
some letters.
What would be typical for world leaders would be to go ahead and agree and say, of course, you know, we'll do this, and then not.
Right. It was understandable.
It seems like...
About giving up the weapons.
Yeah, I mean, it was understandable because we were, in Eisenhower's day anyway, entering a period of Cold War. We had already demonstrated to the world that we had the resolve to attack cities who were largely populated with civilians, not soldiers, with weapons of mass destruction. If we're willing to do it with the Japanese, we'd be willing to do it with anyone. And that threat is how we accomplished world peace. And that began a game of very dangerous one-upmanship, far surpassing the world's ability to absorb the radiation from the cumulative tonnage of weapons like this. And what had happened is we brought ourselves to the brink of nuclear winter annihilation. Why would aliens care a whit about that?
Well, from what I've read, there are some barren planets not too far away from us that are barren because of nuclear war. And it's not something new to this planet. And so the extraterrestrials had experience with this. They knew what could happen to our planet. And they knew that the radiation could radiate out into space and affect... they're basically all connected, really, in many ways. And it would have affected... Beyond even our solar system. That's what they claimed. So that was their reasoning. And it makes sense, actually. We don't know enough about nuclear radiation to really understand how far it can radiate out.
Well, we do know that on a subatomic level, the way to make a hydrogen reaction take place, that is to say a fusion reaction, is to use an atom bomb as the trigger. We actually use the intense gamma radiation from the fission reaction to compress the tritium to make the fusion reaction happen. That's how powerful the gamma radiation is. Now, I'm told from my friends at the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatories that when a nuclear weapon is detonated, it actually warps space-time. This means that it has a multidimensional effect. In other words, it rattles the dishes in other dimensions. So maybe that's what they're concerned about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and that sounds right, because of the research I've done on the space-time dimension is that this could happen. Space-time pervades all of space, really. And even though it's invisible, and apparently there's no energy there, but nevertheless there is energy there. And we don't know how far it goes. It may pervade the entire galaxy, for all we know, or beyond.
Well, we've had freak sudden geomagnetic storms pop up right in our own solar system, actually between our sun and Earth, while we've had probes in orbit looking for that kind of disturbance. Without a sunspot, without solar wind, all of a sudden, bursting out of nowhere, right out of the blackness of space, what the article called a cosmic bullet exploded. And when the shock wave reached Earth, it caused an aurora borealis over the northern hemisphere. The same shock wave went out into space. That could have been some kind of subspace explosion in another dimension that broke through into our dimension. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but we didn't just blow up two nuclear weapons, did we, Lynn? How many did the United States and Russia and China explode over the last 50 years?
Oh, there were dozens and dozens. There. How about the underground explosions out in the West? How do we know how many the Russians exploded? We don't know. But how many do you think? I don't know. Perhaps 40 or 50?
That's a good question. It is a good question. I happen to have the answer. When I was doing my postgraduate work at Oakland, they told me over 600 of those explosions were detonated.
Wow. Well.
Yeah, what, that boggles the mind. And that's just us. That's just us. The Russians did just as much testing.
Right. Well, you know, the ironic part of this is that probably the Pleiadians, if we had agreed to do this, they would have given us the means to defend ourselves one way or the other if we needed it, if we really needed it. And it was just that a militant faction within the government at that point said, no way. No way, we're not giving up the nuclear weapons. And so the deal was never made. And who knows what kind of societies we would have if they had made the deal. No way to tell. But unfortunately, only a few months later, Eisenhower did make a deal with another faction, another extraterrestrial faction, the so-called Big Nose Greys. And that took place at Holloman Air Base in New Mexico. And that was the one that got us into all of this trouble right now. Because as a result of that treaty, which has been called the Treaty of Grajeda, in April of 1954, we agreed to let them abduct U.S. citizens in return for certain technologies they were willing to give us. And that deal is the one that still haunts us. And there doesn't seem to be any way out of it, actually.
As long as it wasn't anybody really important, like their children, it would be okay, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, was
not
this
in my book.
Was this the relatives? Was this the relatives of what's known as EBE number one, the survivor of the Roswell crash?
No, this was a whole different group. As far as my research is concerned, that alien did stay alive until 1952, and he was from the Zeta Reticuli star system. And Project Serpo was a result of that connection. Are you familiar with?
Yeah, let's
Project
talk
Serpo?
About Serpo a little bit. Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. What was that? How did we make that deal? What was it that happened during that project?
Well, by 1952, by the time this EBE number one died, we already had 10 dead aliens in cold storage at Wright-Patterson. From the two crashes that occurred that night of July 4th. But it turned out there was a device on the Roswell craft that allowed him to communicate with his home planet, and that device was turned over to the scientists at Los Alamos. They started working on it. Eventually, they were able to communicate with Serpo. At that time, they didn't know the name of the planet. All they knew that was that a planet 48 light years away. That communication was the beginning of Project Serpo. In 1964, it was arranged that they would send a craft here to pick up the bodies of the 11 dead aliens. At that time, President Kennedy had just come into office, and when he found out about it, he decided to make it an exchange program. So he was more or less the one that decreed Project Crystal Knight. That's what it was originally called, and then it became known as Project Serpo. In which we would send 12 aliens to Serpo, they would send one here, and we would have sort of an exchange program going on. And that's what happened.
So we prepared 12 special humans, and we sent them to the planet Serpo, and they left an emissary here while they were away at their planet.
Exactly. Just exactly as in the movie, Close Encounters, that's the way it was shown. Spielberg obviously had inside information. We're not sure how he got it, but the movie was very closely related to the actual event. He had most of the details correct.
So, well, I think the artistic license with, you know, the cat and mouse game that took up the first three quarters of the movie and really hooked people in. You know, was certainly added to the events leading up.
That was added. Yes, it was. Well, that's typical Spielberg.
And the other thing was that there was something that Spielberg added in this movie that really, I'm going to say, tells about a spirit that's in the UFO genre, in the UFO ranks of the enthusiasts, whether we're talking about Star Trek fans or whether we're just talking about, you know, space watchers, sky watchers. And that is that there was some kind of telepathic image or message that was sent by these aliens that only certain humans would express, either in art or visions or dreams or whatever. And an even smaller number than that acted on those visions and ended up at the point of rendezvous. That exactly. seems to be a theme that's flowing through the UFO community. Was there any kind of activity like that surrounding SERPO?
Well, that I covered that in the very first chapter of the book on George Adamski. That's exactly how he was brought to that rendezvous point, was telepathically. And he knew exactly where to go to meet the alien that we now call Orthon. So that meeting was basically the result of telepathic communication, I believe. But you're right, it pervades the entire literature. There's so much of it went on. So I think we have to now accept the reality of telepathy. I believe it exists, certainly.
Well, it isn't with everyone. And not everyone no. seems to get the images or seems to understand the imagery behind it, the concept behind it. They feel funny or they feel confused, but some of them, it makes a little more sense. Now, I'm going to add this kind of parenthetically here because this is not rare. We have this even described in our own Bible. If you'll remember, let me just throw an example out here. When Jesus showed up at the River Jordan and was baptized by John the Baptist, you know, there weren't any Christians there, okay? They hadn't really come of age yet. But there were a lot of Zoroastrians there. These were sort of like pre-Christians. And there were other religions there because John was an interesting fellow, and it was interesting to listen to him and to watch him work, and he was inspiring. So people went out in the desert to see what he had to say. But when the baptism of Jesus occurred and the dove came out of heaven and landed on his shoulder and the voice of God came out of heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased, hear ye him," it says also in that same scripture that most people heard nothing but the wind or the sound of rushing waters, but some heard the voice, which means some people are in tune with that telepathic message, and some are not. So we're not unfamiliar with this theme, are we?
Right, exactly. Right. That's exactly what happened. With Moses. He was the only one to hear the voice of God. The others did not hear. So it's not an uncommon story, especially in the Bible.
Well, now I'm going to try and paint a little bigger picture here, because you know. We have this whole idea that it's us and them, that it's humans and it's aliens, but really what we're talking about here is a population of sentient beings in our galaxy. Let's just call it the Milky Way galaxy, since we're only talking about 48 light years away. And we have at least a universal idea that the soul that's inside the biological transducer you and I call our bodies that we walk around on this planet in is some eternal thing. It has existed for a long time, and it will exist long after this body has turned to dust, right?
Right, exactly. Yes, I believe that.
So is there some kind of lineage, some kind of commonality in all sentient beings in our universe, especially in our galaxy? Would you say that?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. And that's the reason, maybe, that we can communicate telepathically with other species because of that connection. Because it seems to come naturally to many humans to be able to communicate with aliens of every stripe. So I agree with that completely.
I maintain I'm kind of an outsider to this. I have not been a UFO follower my whole life. I only saw my first one when I was 52 years old. So I'm kind of late to this. So I look at this from the outside, but I'm looking at it analytically, and I say that there is substantial evidence that pervades this from the very first contact up until this afternoon, if it happened somewhere on Earth, that there is some relation between the humans that are on the Earth right now or are coming to the Earth right now, either in birth or in other ways, and those races that exist on the other worlds. And maybe that is the reason why there's such concern for moving us away from what seems to be our warlike tendencies and more toward the great peace that we're capable of doing. I got to ask you, Len, you're a journalist, you read all the time, you write all the time. Why is the human race always at war?
Well, from what I've been able to determine, war is not unique to the human race. The so-called Draconians, from Alpha Draconis, the Reptiloids, the Greys from other star systems, are also fierce and warlike. Apparently, this is a fact of galactic existence. But those civilizations that have graduated above it, the spiritual ones, are the ones that have risen above it, are the most advanced. And we would be very fortunate to be contacted by them, as we were in 1952, because they can see it for what it is. Even the Greys, who have been involved in horrendous wars on their home planets, which forced them to go underground and live underground for many, many, many generations, and ultimately caused them to become stunted in growth and to become to develop a hive mentality. It's not new to the galaxy. There are good civilizations out there, and there are warlike civilizations out there. We have to be realistic about that. Just because a group of aliens is from a different star system does not guarantee that they are ahead of us spiritually.
One would ask the question, are the good ones and the bad ones both here on Earth now?
I think they are, yeah. I think there's no question that the reptilians are here. In fact, I believe the reptilians have underground facilities all over the planet. And I think that they were responsible for Hitler and for the Axis powers technology. And I do cover that in the book, and I have two chapters on extraterrestrial influence on World War II. You know, there's both out there. We have to be realistic about that. And I think
was it that they were helping Hitler come to power, or they were just keeping the world at war?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with somebody named Branton. Have you heard that name before?
No, I haven't. Go ahead and tell us about it.
Branton he's written extensively on extraterrestrial civilizations. I'm not sure where he got all his information from, but a lot of it does check out. And he's convinced that the wars, what we call Star Wars, really is a fact. It's a fact of life that the Alpha Draconians attacked the Lyrans many, many eons ago, and that war is continuing. And supposedly they now control 21 star systems near to us in this particular cluster. And that's their goal, is to control these stars, these planets. So the war just rages on, and it's on many levels.
Well, it could be exactly that. One of the concerns that I have, and a lot of people that look at this genre do have, is that if the peaceful ones are here, for one thing, they could be peaceful just by way of staying out of the way of the bad guys. The other is that they could be peaceful through superior firepower, which is the way the U.S. prefers to have peace. And as you remember, the Romans in ancient times.
The Roman peace.
Is Earth going to be the new battleground, since we live on the surface of our planet and have liquid water and a variety of life on this planet, which other planets obviously don't have, or it is at least rare in the galaxy? Is this going to be the new battleground, and with whom do we side? How do we know who's the good guys?
I don't think Earth will be the new battleground. I think the situation here is going to be resolved very soon, and I think there are forces in the galaxy that are much more powerful, that more or less act as referees and can step in anytime they choose, but they are non-interventionist. And a lot of it is our karma that has to be played out. That comes into it too.
Because so we're a group of very ancient beings and a group of very young beings all cohabitating on a planet at the same time. And it seems that, at least from my perspective, that they are very young, immature, non-wise ones, have their fingers on the button and all the numbers to the big bank accounts. And those of us that don't really care about the material things of the world, but more about the spiritual and the learning of the world and the harmony of the world, are in the other group. So how does the ones that have the gold stop making the rules, and the ones that have the wisdom and the history, and at least are able to bring some semblance of their ancient wisdom to bear in a single lifetime, how do they step in and become leadership instead?
You're probably familiar with all the literature about the fact that the Earth is about to go into the fourth dimension. It's all a game of consciousness. It's all about consciousness. As the consciousness rises among any group of people or any civilization, they just automatically discard all their warlike attitudes. It's a matter of higher consciousness. So I think the powers that be know that the consciousness on this planet is going to get elevated soon. And when that happens, I think nobody will want to go to war with anybody else, just automatically, because they will realize the futility of it and how stupid it is. But until they achieve that state of consciousness, it doesn't become apparent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a little like trying to capture smoke in your hands. The tighter you squeeze, the easier it slips through your fingers.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good metaphor. So, and you know, a lot of people are talking about the fact that 2012 is going to be the dividing point. And after 2012, those who cannot live up to the higher consciousness on this planet are just going to have to leave it one way or the other.
Oh, maybe the planet is going to...
I'm hearing that from a lot of different groups.
Maybe the planet's going to divide the way the Mayans say, and part of it's going to go into the fourth dimension, and part of it's going to be left in a third dimension, and the two will perceive not each other.
Yeah, I've heard that. That is a very distinct possibility. I agree.
Well, it takes a different kind of focus, you know. The aliens that show up here don't seem to be coming with bags of gold because they don't need it.
Right. It's a complex situation, and the fact that we've been kept in the dark about the whole thing is not helping the situation. The suppression and the failure to disclose is not helping us to understand the situation and to make good decisions.
Well, as I said earlier, we're not alone in that. Every single municipality out there, big or small, is grabbing up as much alien technology as they can because they think there's some kind of advantage to it or it's worth money, sort of like meteors falling from the sky. They can trade it for something or negotiate with it. We're going to cover that a lot more in about 10 minutes. We've got Dan Willis, who is one of the disclosure witnesses. We've had him on the program before. He's a former radio man with the Navy who received the message from a naval vessel that a very large disc had come up out of the water and was taking off up into space at Mach 8. So he is a direct disclosure witness. He's involved with the disclosure movement. And I think Len and I, and of course Dan, have all met Stephen Greer, and we know what pioneer work he has done, what tremendous leadership and organizational ability he has brought to bear in trying to make this disclosure happen. And we're going to cover that in the next hour. But as we wrap up this hour, I want to try to establish at least that there is not as much difference between the aliens that are visiting us and the humans that are born here. I think that's what I'm trying to establish here.
In terms of what, consciousness or?
Yeah, in terms of consciousness, in terms of right to exist in the galaxy, and maybe even ultimate lineage.
Not only that, but I think there are more aliens living here than you would believe. That a lot of what we call humans are really aliens who are passing for humans. We don't know how many of those there are. So it gets really complicated.
Well, aside from those that I see at peopleofwalmart.com, what aliens do you think are living here?
I think that there are several groups of aliens living here. There's one group that's living on a South Seas island in Polynesia, according to what I've read, that they literally have their own society out there. There's a lot more of them than you would think. And then, of course, there are all the hybrids that are being created by the Greys. So there's so much going on here that it's getting harder and harder to tell the players without a program. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. According to our friend Nigel Kerner, he thinks that the Greys are here. They're basically soulless beings or biological robots looking for a way to extend their existence by piggybacking on the ability of humans to reincarnate.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't think that they're actually soulless. I think that they're missing out on the emotional and the spiritual aspects that we enjoy. And they're seeking to capture that through the hybrid program. I'm not sure whether that's doable or not, but apparently some of that is going on. They claim that they're doomed to extinction because right now they really reproduce by cloning, and that over a long period of time, that tends to deteriorate, and they know that. So that's supposedly why, according to John Mack and according to Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, that's the reason they've started the hybrid program.
Well, it's true. We can't even clone lima beans without losing some of the genetic integrity there. So it's definitely going to happen. Okay, we're going to take a quick 5-minute break. Len Kasten is our guest. His book is The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. We'll tell you how you can get that book in about 5 minutes. We're going to be back with Len, still going to stay with us. We're going to bring Dan Willis on for half an hour or an hour, and we're going to go into the Disclosure Project and talk about it. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this. Don't go away.
Without it,
We welcome you to X Squared Radio tonight. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi, doing a little industrial realignment after Katrina down here. Some of the industry is beginning to rebound, and we have to relocate some industrial equipment down here in order to meet that demand. Don't forget, if you're in the market for Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, the latest Amazon bestseller, you can pick it up at rememberingthefuturebook.com. If you buy it from there, you'll get the autographed version and the audio version. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. You will also have access to Maureen St. Germain's CD. If you click on the icon there, you can pick up the CD that'll help you with the meditation that is part of the latter part of that book. If you want to be part of the program tonight, this hour, we're going to cover the Disclosure Project and a lot of the ideas that have come about of late, that the government should come clean with amnesty. Tell us what's going on. You can join us by calling 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. And, of course, if you're listening by cell phone, we're glad you're with us. You're out there, want to leave and still listen, you can get to us 712-432-0075. Len Kasten is my guest. He is the author of The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, Advanced Technology and the Coming New Race. Len, go ahead and tell us how we can get that book. Well, I know Len's still out there, just waiting for the control room to patch him in again. I know he can hear me. While you're traveling out there this winter, don't forget to put your emergency preparedness kit together by going to our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. And don't forget, when you check out, make sure that you put in the name Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, in the coupon code, and you'll get an extra 10% off. Now, we're going to get Len back here in just a second, and Dan Willis is going to be with us. So we're going to have three-way on here, and you're always welcome here, so you can call in at 530-413-4511. Also, coming up in February, if you're making your early spring plans, you want to participate in the Flower of Life meditation. We are going to be teaching that in Concord, North Carolina. If you want to find out more about it, we have a link at xsquaredradio.com. And we'll also be putting a link tomorrow up at rememberingthefuturebook.com. And you can come to Concord, North Carolina. It's in the center of about 70% of the population of the United States, so we're within driving distance of you there. Maureen St. Germain, master teacher of the Flower of Life meditation, will be leading the event, and I will be there assisting. So we'll let you know what hotel that's at. It's very affordable. It's one of the best three-day workshops out there. I promise it'll be life-changing. I highly recommend getting the CD now. Get the book now. Practice the meditation before that date comes up, and then you'll be ready to work out any of the mistakes that you're making and fine-tune that. So our guests are back with us. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away. X Squared Radio. We'll be right back. The Secret History of Extraterrestrials by Len Kasten, another great book published by Bear Publishers. And you can get other fantastic books by them. Go to bearpublishing.com. Len, welcome back to the program. Tell our listeners how they can get your book, and then we'll launch into the Disclosure Project.
The book can be ordered through my website, www.et-secrethistory.com. And on the website, you can order the book through any of the major booksellers, either Barnes & Noble or Borders or Amazon, or directly from the publisher at Inner Traditions, just by clicking on that connection. Actually, I think it's already in many of the other bookstores as well, so it's easy to get at this point.
Excellent. Bear does a great job. They also have, Cataclysm, The Day the Earth Nearly Died. This is a book put out by Allen and Dallaire. It's the Bible, if you want to talk about old history and the cataclysm that happened 9500 B.C., Allen and Dallaire are no longer available for interview. I tried for years to find them, but their book is good, so I highly recommend it. All right, we have Dan Willis tonight. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brooks. It's a pleasure being on the show with you.
Dan is the Navy, former Navy radio man, received the message from the naval vessel that had seen a large disc come up out of the water and then launch out into space at Mach 8. So he is a Disclosure Project witness, and he is also involved in that project and stays up with pretty much of it. Tell us what you're doing now, Dan. What are you working on?
Oh, I'm embarrassed. I missed the first part of the show. I live off-grid on top of a remote mountain, and I had a little bit of a maintenance crisis I had to deal with, and I came in late. I wish I could have heard the first part of the show. But as far as, you know, the disclosure, once in a while when I get a chance, I get to do a radio show. I haven't been too huge of an activist, you know, since 2001. My God, that was almost 10 years ago now. It's just kind of frustrating, you know, because I used to be an ABC newsman, and I took pretty keen awareness of how the media, you know, gets this information out. And, you know, it just, although the internet, you know, is getting the story out in various ways, you know, as far as the mainstream goes, you know, you get pretty much what the agreed upon perception is.
Well, it seems like mainstream is the laughing stock now. When it used to be, you know, if you weren't mainstream, people kind of looked at you sideways. Now you say, well, I heard about it in the mainstream news, and everybody kind of belly laughs and then say, gee, how much did they pay to get their story out in mainstream news? You know, it's all entertainment now. Nobody pays attention to the mainstream news.
Yeah, well,
I was going to say, Len Kasten wrote this fantastic book called The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, and one of the things that he covers in really succinct, and I use that word, you need to look it up because it's a great word, in succinct chronology is the Disclosure Project. Few people really know the scope of the dedication and really the barren wasteland that Stephen Greer walked on in the early 90s. Tell us right. How the whole story came about, Len.
Well, it started with Project Starlight, I believe. Greer started interviewing a lot of the witnesses who had been involved from the military, from the intelligence community, and getting their stories on tape and putting it all together. And before he knew it, he had, I think, 400 such stories. And the time came when he realized the best thing to do was to go with the National Press Club and put it on radio. And he did that, I think, in 2001, was it, Dan?
May 9th, 2001.
Right. And everyone thought, of course, it would make a big splash and would be on the front page of the newspapers the next day, and actually it didn't. It sort of just disappeared into a big black hole. So
I thought it was just me.
It applies to the power of the media to keep these things under wraps, you know?
Interesting how they did it. You know, if you watch carefully, you know, if you're a psychological operation, you watch where they cut it. You know, it's like there was so much said about, you know, reverse engineering and that we already have the witnesses. In fact, you know, I went on CBS, they did a special interview with me, and I said, I'm not willing to do this interview unless I could say we have the scientists willing to come forth and show we have technology that can end the energy and environmental crisis. And they promised up and down. Of course, they cut it out, and they did the exact cookie cutter that CNN did. And basically, the only part that got, you know, disclosed, so to speak, is these objects have been tracked on radar going thousands of miles per hour, stopping and making right-hand turns. And then the next statement is right after that, and we've already reverse-engineered this, and we already have the technology, you know, and so forth and so on. But very carefully, what gets edited out is, you can see the only thing that he wanted to really disclose was that, yes, there could be a reality of extraterrestrials, but they didn't want to have anything disclosed that would implicate that there has been a corporate seizure of our security system, and that there's been these unacknowledged projects that have been going on for years. And, you know, we don't want to go down that path. So that's what I noticed with the media.
Well, you know, maybe it wasn't so much that they figured that the public would say, okay, well, we already know that UFOs are here, so no big deal. Okay, what football game's on tonight? You know, that's exactly. About how long their attention span goes. But if the additional statement, oh yeah, by the way, we retrieved the craft, and now we have the motor of that craft duplicated in our military aircraft, then they figure the public would go, hey, wait a minute. You mean there's really evidence that you guys are reverse engineering this? Where is it? Then there would be public clamor. Then there would be an industrial revolution.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that would be the case, because I don't think it would reach the level of the public starting to harangue their congressmen for legislation. I think the next day everyone would get up and go to work and go back to their problems with money and romance and health, and it wouldn't be on their agenda to try and start writing their congressman about that. It just wasn't going to happen.
Well, in a way, I agree with you, Lynn. I mean, I read that in your book, and I went over it a couple times, and I thought, you know, the average person probably would take a second look at this, but. And probably Dan's, you've been in Washington more often than I have, but as often as I go there and I sit down with Congress and talk about, you know, various industrial challenges that we have with imports and exports and money and funding and stuff like that, Congress people are generally clueless. You know, they're looked at as temps in Washington. Nobody pays them any attention whatsoever. I don't think the elected officials of our country know anything that's going on.
That's absolutely accurate. You know, after we did the event at the press club, you know, we went around the country. We're trying to get people to write letters, and I said, "Well, that's not going to happen. You know, people just don't sit down and write letters, and emails get deleted." So I put an online fax, and about 30,000 faxes went in, and then I had everybody send me the faxes. And what happened, I noticed there was a pattern in that these senators and representatives, they would use these pat statements from NASA of denial, and they would all have I started to notice there was a set way to respond to this issue that all of the people up on Capitol Hill were responding to. Basically, we'll keep your views in mind, you know, if there's any extraterrestrial hearings come to, you know, the Congress. you get a thing from NASA that NASA, you know, has, you know, that there's, you know, nothing happening there. You know, and even though you have, like, hundreds of military witnesses, you know, that are, you know, willing to risk their national security oath, you know, going in front of the microphones here. And, you know, there's no more evidence I can think of than having hundreds of people with evidence that correlates with each other. I mean, how much more evidence can you have than that?
Well, you know, I have a general good feeling about this, that I'm accurate on this. NASA and Jet Propulsion Labs as well. I was a co-op at Jet Propulsion Labs when I was a kid, and I've hung around these organizations my whole life and people that have been in and out of them. NASA is not the organization it was in the 60s when they put together a plan to go to the moon. These are not industrial specialists. These are academics, and they're low budget. NASA gets a paltry budget compared to the military budget. They get the table scraps. They are the PR firm for the United States government that says, yes, we kind of have an active space program. That's not the real space program, folks. NASA doesn't have a clue. If you don't believe me, go to their website, go to JPL's website, look at the videos. Look at the very latest videos that were put out this week. Look at the ages of the people that are putting out these videos. They're in their early 20s. They're just out of college. They have no experience whatsoever, and they're working for grad student wages. I don't know if you know what a grad student is, but in our genre, we call them slaves. They work for nothing, okay? They don't know anything except what academic rank they're trying to achieve, and these are the least wave makers that you're going to find in any organization. So Dan is exactly right. It is these veteran, military, lifelong bureaucrats that have worked inside the system, not as grad students, but as GS-11s, GS-12s, GS-14s, nine levels inside that. These people are making six figures plus bonuses. These people know what's going on. NASA has not a clue.
Well, some of the top level of people at NASA must know. I mean, the elite, perhaps the elite, which really is connected to the CIA, they must know. They have to. Don't you think?
Well, I agree with you, but they're receiving budgets of $600 million a year. The military is getting $1.3 trillion a year.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's not NASA, generally speaking. It's not military, generally speaking, or the intelligence community. It's the operatives that are a very high-level class that is in charge of these kind of situations. Actually, I have a treat for everybody. I have a number of real short audio clips of testimonies of a few of the witnesses, like such as General Lubkin, who was on Eisenhower's staff back in 1959, back when he found that the wreckage came from Roswell, and he saw some of the wreckage, and then he found that Eisenhower basically was saying to him that he was sold out by the corporations that came in and took over control of the whole situation and basically took our regular legal government out of the loop. It's less than 2 minutes if you'd like to hear the little short clip.
I would love to hear it.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it. Go ahead.
Okay, here it goes.
We were in the basement of the Pentagon, and in those days, that was in 1959, there was a tremendous amount of security there at the base of the Pentagon. Anybody who's worked there knows what I'm talking about. Colonel Holabird brought out a piece of what appeared to be a metallic, looked like a yardstick. It had deciphering, it had encryption on it. He did it, described them as being symbols of instruction, and that's as far as he would go. But he did infer that the instructions, whatever they might have been, were something that was important enough for the military to keep working on a constant basis. It seemed giant-like when I saw it because it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like this before, and all eyes were just peeled on that particular thing. And when he told us what it was, it was frightening. It was eerie there. You could have heard a pin drop in the room when it was first mentioned. Well, he said it had been taken from one of the craft that had crashed in New Mexico. and it had been taken from a box of materials that the military was working on. They didn't use the word reverse engineering at that time, but it was something similar to the reverse engineering that they felt like they needed to work on, and it was going to take years to do this. Extraterrestrial bodies, yes. There were either three or five, one was alive, partially alive at the time that this happened, and I do not know what may have happened to him after that.
Okay, that was
this is
place of acquisition.
Right. This is exactly in the...
What was that, Len?
Everything Colonel Corso said in his book, The Day After Roswell.
Well, now, the interesting thing is that we have Eisenhower, who was the supreme Allied commander during World War I, and one of the very few military men elected to be president so short after a war. Usually, we elect them before a war or during a war, but after the war, we want to get over it and get on to peace. But Eisenhower gets elected. This is one of his staff members. So Eisenhower... also being privy to the best military technology in the world while he's Allied Supreme Commander, now President, understands the intricacy and the powers that are competing over this technology. How did Eisenhower get involved at this point?
Yeah, well, he saw that all of this was going into the hands of the corporations, because when they had to reverse engineer, they had to bring in some of the greatest minds of which were in, not in the military, it was in, you know, Lockheed, Northrop, you know, all the Boeing, and, you know, all these different companies that had very highly compartmented, unacknowledged projects that were reverse engineering to try to understand some of this technology. But what happened was these corporations, which are owned by, you know, some of the wealthiest people in the world, they saw that, you know, when you start to bring out something that can eliminate the need for oil, eliminate the need for roads with anti-gravity and things like that, they saw it as a threat, and they needed to have not to have disclosure on it. And so basically, Eisenhower got sold out. I have a 42-second clip if I could play on that one.
Well, before you play it, and I want you to play it, you use the word threat. I want to dig into that a little bit. A threat to whom?
Threat to the oil-based world economy, the oil-based banking world economy, which they didn't want to give up at that point.
So there's the idea that...
oil again.
It's oil.
Then unless... unless we're burning oil in an internal combustion engine for transportation, that the oil companies are going to fail. Was that the general fear?
That's it. Well, you have these huge multi-trillion-dollar empires based on oil.
Yeah.
And they need to maintain that. And it's so sad, you know? You know, because we could have had, you know, when we were, I was born back in 49. I was like, I was thinking in the future we'd be driving anti-gravity cars and, you know, be using, you know, zero-point energy devices, and, you know, there wouldn't be any pollution. Things would be working more in
there was such an expensive infrastructure in place for processing oil that to give that up and not being able to keep getting those profits would be a tremendous loss to these people. They weren't about to give that up. They were just not about to give it up. And where do the banks get all their money from? They get it from the oil companies.
It's like a mafia,
or the insurance,
you know, only much bigger.
Exactly.
Well, I got to tell you, I've been in the fuel business, and I'm in the car business. Been in the car business my whole life, and I could tell you, when I look at the research that's been put out by the Department of Transportation on the use of gasoline, the use of diesel fuel in the United States, the prediction is that it's flat for the next 20 years. The usage of those fuels is flat for the next 20 years. Now, we know for sure that the population is going to go up. The number of vehicles driven by that population is going to go up. And yet the use of fuel is flat. We also know that there has not been a refinery constructed in the United States for 28 years. There's not been a nuclear power plant constructed in the United States for 25 years. We also know that we are making things out of plastic and laminates of polymers at a rate we couldn't even closely have imagined in Eisenhower's day. All of that requires oil. I happen to believe that the oil companies would welcome something to take the load of gasoline and diesel fuel off their refineries so that they could make more polymers and more coatings for plastics and laminates. Everything from computer cases to cell phones to fibers to fertilizers is made from oil. And it needs to be made in this country instead of imported. So I don't think that we're going to be increasing our use in gasoline. And I don't think it's the oil companies that are behind the suppression of this information. I think it goes much higher than that. And that's hard to believe. But I think it goes to a technological breakthrough in weaponry. I think that is where all the money comes from. That's where all the money gets spent. And right now, there is a one-upmanship in weaponry that happens to be in the hands of the United States. How long? We don't know. But that is the fear, I think. What do you guys think?
I'm sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no. I have so much to say on this. Yeah, I think, you know, geopolitical control, you know, comes into play on this. And I definitely agree it's a level higher than the oil companies, but it's the ones that own the oil companies, you know.
I could quote from one sentence in the book here, the chapter I wrote about Stephen Greer. He said that he had learned, this is back in 1993, he said that he had learned that the real information was controlled by a top-secret, quasi-governmental, quasi-private international group, and therefore it was necessary to convince that group that the time had come to release the information. So it really was above government, and the so-called satellite government that Wolf talks about, that he had to convince, and they have the financial interests in the whole situation.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not a satellite government. Maybe it's the core government. Okay, now play your 42-second clip. Let's see how it fits.
Okay, here goes.
But what happened was, Eisenhower got sold out. I think that he realized that all of a sudden this matter is going into the control of corporations. He realized that he was losing control. He realized that the phenomenon of whatever it was that we were faced with was not going to be in the best hands, and that those were the, as far as I can remember, that was the expression that was used. It's not going to be in the best hands. And so it has turned out to be.
Well, I look at a recent project. It was a good R&D project. What's going to come after this space shuttle? You know, the space shuttle's been a very, very successful, albeit a few tragic accidents, space vehicle. We have the mini shuttle, the little non-manned shuttle that NASA's been working on for, gosh, well over a decade, maybe close to two decades. And all of a sudden, they either run out of money or they run out of technology or they get to the point where they're going to have to employ some advanced technology to make this thing work, and they're not ready to disclose that to the public. So they give up on it. Or do they? The Air Force moves in with its rapid deployment budget, seizes the project, takes it over, puts it on the fast track, and the next thing you know, it's in space. Now, what do you guys know about the X-37B?
What's the propulsion system on that?
I don't know.
I know about the Aurora. I know about the Aurora that makes routine trips to the moon out of Vandenberg Air Force Base, according to Bob Dean, and out of Dugway in Utah. and also that we have routine trips to Mars as well. That's not being told to the public. So we have craft that are using very, very advanced technology, even beyond anti-gravity.
Everything indicates there's a. We've got some the greatest props you can imagine. You know, the rockets that shoot all these jet fuel and everything. But, you know, we have this technology that on the surface it looks like this is where our current state of the art is. But behind the scenes in the black projects, you know, as Ben Rich said, anything you can imagine we've already done. We've got the technology to go to the stars and beyond. It looks like a science fiction world back there. And you know, it's almost like a the whole industrial military complex. I mean, it's not like Abby Hoffman or anything, but you know, it's like a it has to keep having an enemy. It has to keep creating new weapons. It runs like that, and it has to keep operating. And it's interesting. You know, one of the witnesses, Dr. Kyle Rosen, a friend of mine, that said that Wernher von Braun, who was on the inside with a secret government, they disclosed these far-reaching plans in the future of, you know, being able to have these hoaxed threats in order to gain support for, you know, militarizing and increasing the weaponry and stuff like that. And in the beginning was Russia, and then there was rogue nations, and then there was terrorists, which we're at now. And then they said there was going to be asteroids, and the final card was going to be an alien threat. And, you know, I watch these Hollywood movies, you know, I kind of watch to see where they're kind of feeding our subconscious about what, you know, people should think about extraterrestrials, you know, like the movie, like, you know, Independence Day, and the new one that just came out, Skyline.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
this is one for the propagandists.
It's like Pearl Harbor that came out before 9/11, right? You know, it's yes, go ahead.
You do know that according to Colonel Corso, there were human body parts found in one of the Roswell craft, and there is sufficient evidence that there may indeed be an alien threat. You do know about, of course, General MacArthur's famous speech where he said the next war would be interplanetary. I think there is a large segment within the military, within the intelligence community, even with this quasi-government, that does understand that we are up against perhaps at least one group of hostile extraterrestrials that we have to be aware of. Don't you think that exists, that possibility? I mean, who's doing this hybrid program? Is that... Did we agree to that? Things like that.
Well, I've seen the craft. I've had one go about 100 feet over me. I haven't met with any of them. I have friends that have had contact and been interacted with them, and it's very positive. My take on it, it seems that as we evolve, you know, as you know, just looking at the human race as we go over through time, that we become, at least you'd think, a little more conscious, a little more responsible for our creative actions that we do. And if you just look in the last 200 years, you know, what's happened, you know, you can imagine several thousand years of advancement, that it would seem anyway that an advanced race would become very consciously responsible for every action that it would do. You know, so to come in with, you know, the lasers blasting and, you know, and vaporizing us and taking over the planet, seems like from the conscious mindset of where we are, rather than a race that would be thousands of years in advance. And you look at what they do to our, you know, when we started playing with nuclear weapons, you know, they have started having sightings all over the place. And what they've done is essentially, I mean, like Robert Salas said on Larry King, you know, they could have, you know, come in and, you know, wiped out the entire nuclear arsenal, but, you know, all he did was turn them off, made them, you know, so they couldn't be launched.
According to Andy Perrow, I don't know if you know who Andy Perrow is, but he's one of those super soldiers that they developed. according to him, they want to take the planet intact, which means that the way to do it is with mind control, and that their whole approach is simply through propaganda and other mind control techniques, take over the planet without firing a weapon. Just take over the minds of the people.
And yeah, we could do that just by making, we could do that just by making everybody focus on their debit cards. As long as they can keep shopping and they keep themselves slightly out of debt and keep their shoulder against the grindstone and buy Christmas presents here in a couple days, everything's okay.
Exactly. That's right. Propaganda. So,
you know, it's interesting that you bring this up because this is exactly the progression of this genre. As we discuss this, and sometimes it takes weeks to get to this point because it's hard to sit down and talk about this for weeks. But here in a 3-hour program on X Squared Radio, we can reach this point in less than half the show. We got about 25 minutes in the second hour. We reached the point where the human race is about to make a decision for entire humankind. Are we going to continue to be, shall we say, plugged into the matrix, or are we going to awaken and become part of the star community? And one man at least took upon himself his advanced education and his particular placements here and there, and he put together a very interesting paper to discuss this because it got to the point where this was no longer an issue for the president of the United States or for the head of the UN, but for the human race. And he put together a paper called The Need for Exopolitics, Implications of Extraterrestrial Conspiracy Theories for Policymakers and Globalists.
Michael Sala, yeah.
Yes, his name is Michael Sala. I know him well. I've spoken at his conventions before. I've met him in person. And Angelica Whitecliffe, great organization. He has four perspectives in this paper: the intruder perspective, the manipulator perspective, the helper perspective, and the watcher perspective.
Right, exactly.
What's going on? I mean, this guy did some really thorough thinking in this paper. Now, it's a philosophical paper, yes, but it does open the avenue sooner or later, and here we are an hour and a half into X Squared Radio. We've reached the point. We got to think about how do we negotiate. How do we fit into the galactic community? Are we going to be taken over intact? Are we going to fight? Or are we going to contribute and become a member of the family? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Exactly. And that is the decision we have to make as a race, exactly. And how it can be made, I don't know, because there's not going to be a consensus. Certainly.
Well, a consensus is only one over the average, so you only need one extra person to have a consensus. We need an overwhelming majority, and one of the things that Michael Sala called for in his paper, it's what you've been calling for a long time, Dan, and what we've been talking about tonight. We got to have the governments come clean. It's about time that we're not humans against humans anymore. Let's open the archives, open the warehouses, open the crates, and show us what you got.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what's needed.
I don't think they have control. You know, you know as well I do, you know, the people on Capitol Hill, you know, it's like when we sat down, I sat down with Robert Salas and Dr. Cal Rosin in front of the Oregon congressman, and I said, look, we just went on every major network, and if we're, you know, doing a hoax here, you know, we should all be imprisoned. You know, all we're asking is to look into this whole thing. And they were very polite and cordial, but, you know, they just don't want to touch it. They don't know how to touch it. They don't know how to even begin with the subject. Trying to deal with it from the government point of view, it's a situation where they're operating everything. The man behind the curtain is pulling the strings, on controlling the media. That's the major point of perception for the masses out there is watching CNN, the news you can trust, and
well, nobody
and
controls.
Sanitized.
Well, the fact that all of this is three levels above top secret means it's really out of the reach of most of the congressmen and senators. And they don't really know what's going on. This stuff is way up there in the secret realm.
Well, and you know, they put their finger in the air as soon as you say UFO, and they feel a stiff wind from the east. They pull it out and say, "Have a nice day, guys."
Exactly. That's what goes on. And Stephen Greer found that out, and that's why he felt he had to start converting this quasi-governmental group, this top-secret group. And I don't know how successful he was with them.
Yeah, how do we get to that point? How do we get to the point where now we're not talking about a few dissenters, we're not talking about 200 whistleblowers. We're talking about 5 billion people on the planet saying enough is enough.
Yeah, it seems like it has to get in the numbers, and hopefully they don't control the internet too. So that's like a major wonderful resource, although it has a lot of crazy information with it too. People have to sort through. I almost think it's the 100th monkey thing that has to happen with all this. You can blue in your face out there with a sign picketing like they did over in front of Parliament when we did it back in 2001. They had signs showing, you know, expose the secret government, release the extraterrestrial technologies. We're all out there picketing, you know. Nobody out there over in Washington, D.C. was doing anything like that. But, you know, you can do it till you're blue in the face, and it won't do anything. And they know that.
George Norrie asked me if I thought there would ever be disclosure, and I said, no, I don't think so. I think the aliens, the extraterrestrials, have to take this into their own hands. I don't think they're ready to do it quite yet, but I think that's the only way it's going to happen. I don't know which group will be the group that will do it, but I do think that if there, of course, was a mass landing, and by mass landing, I mean hundreds, perhaps thousands of craft, then, of course, it's all over. Disclosure is done. And that's the way I think it's going to happen.
We used to think that it would be a mass flyover that would do that, and it does appear that UFOs from China to Alaska to Mexico to South America are perfectly content with flying. I mean, we just had, in October 13th, we had not only a flyover, we had a flyover in Park over New York City, one of the most nervous cities in the world about strange things in the air. They didn't send up so much as a news helicopter to find out what those things were. They just sat around and looked at them and talked on the news and said, gee, it's wonderful. What are those things? I don't know. Maybe it's Santa Claus. You know, and they laughed about it. This was a city that in 2001, well, post-2001, got paranoid if a plane flew too low. So they're happy with flying over our major cities with impunity. Nobody's bothering them. No one's going up there and harassing them. And science fiction's doing a good job of softening us up for what I have no idea. And now we're talking about a mass land.
Yeah, that's my concern, Brooks, is that that these so-called ET craft are made in USA and I have a 58-second clip, if I could play it, on Carol's warning from Werner von Braun.
Oh, yeah, let's lay that in there.
Okay. Controversy here for it. Here we go.
I was introduced to the late Dr. Werner von Braun in the U.S., the father of rocketry. He said to me, Carol, you will stop the weaponization of space. And we have to prevent the weaponization of space because there is a lie being told to everyone that the weaponization of space is now first being based upon the evil empire, the Russians. Then there would be terrorists. Then there would be third world countries. Now we call them rogue nations or nations of concern. Then there would be asteroids. And then he would repeat to me over and over, and the last card, the last card, the last card would be the extraterrestrial threat. Well, at the time, I kind of laughed when he said asteroids, and when he said extraterrestrials, I knew I wasn't going to deal with that subject. In other words, we have to have some reason to spend these trillions, to waste these dollars on a space-based weapon system, and they're all lies.
Yeah, but it would work, though. Imagine if we had, you know, these so-called ET craft coming from other planets, supposedly coming in and using whatever type of technology to reduce the population on the planet and create a one-world government, which we'd have to weaponize and have this multi-trillion-dollar weapon system in space to fight off these invaders, of which we've been had since the early 50s, you know, all these evil space aliens coming in here to take over our planet and kill us. But, you know, the history of, well, our other guest knows this, you know, we haven't had, you know, if they wanted to do that, it seems like it wouldn't be that difficult for them with advanced technology.
Well, I want to get Len's thoughts on this because he's got such a long history of journalism on this subject, and thus he's gotten a lot of feedback over the years on many different levels, not just from readers, but also from contemporaries. What is the general consensus about the weaponization of space? What's the thrust behind it? I mean, obviously, you know, the Chinese announced well, at least the announcement was released a couple of days ago that the Chinese are going to be starting to build aircraft carriers. Now, this is not a defensive weapon. This is a weapon that allows you to deploy your force in foreign lands. And this is making, you know, this is game on now. We now have another superpower that's going to be entering the naval waters with a super force called a super carrier. Up till now, we really haven't had a uniformed soldier to marshal against. Really, it's just been police efforts here and there, and fighting ghosts, and working with the public perception that we're under attack. I'm not going to say we're under attack, but there's a public perception that we are. What is the justification behind, and what's the feeling behind the weaponization of space?
Well, you know, they've quarantined this. You know, we can't, there's been several instances where we try to get something out with a weapon and the ET craft will come in and neutral. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly what happened up there on the moon back in 1969. That was, interestingly enough, that's when I, you know, was a high-speed code operator and took that message of that reddish-orange glowing elliptical object shooting out of the ocean and shooting up into space. And I didn't take the exact date and time. I know it was the year 1969 because I didn't think I would ever be in the year 2010 talking about this subject, you know. But, you know, it's, I think they're like cowboys, you know. They just want to take their weapons and do what they want and go out there in space. And I think some of the advanced extraterrestrial cultures, just my hunch, is that they are more of a galactic stewards or something of the keeping things in balance, and these people with their weapons going out in space to create disturbances and. You know, is something that needs to be quarantined because we're immature. We're an immature race on this planet that hasn't evolved enough to go peacefully out in space.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I spent a little bit of time in the military myself on active duty. I have lots of friends that have. I have people, close friends that have worked for Lockheed Skunk Works. I can tell you that the bulk of the money is commandeered and spent for military purposes. I'm not talking about the stuff we vote on and budgets and stuff like that that governments argue about. This is much, much bigger than that, many orders of magnitude bigger than that. The X-37B, which was this mini space shuttle that just completed a seven-month mission this month, safely landed in Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is really a strange place for a spacecraft to land, was all paid for by military money. And if Len is right that we have been flying regular missions back and forth to the moon it's not for humanitarian reasons. It's not for scientific reasons. It's for military reasons. We are militarizing space as we speak.
Well, I have a 23-second audio clip of, Mark McCandish talking about his colleague Brad Sorensen actually seeing the faster-than-light craft. It's 23 seconds, so would you like to hear that one?
Yeah, we'll hear that one, then we'll get back with Lynn.
Okay.
Personally, witnessed three flying saucers at a very large hangar at Norton Air Force Base. The presentation that Brad talked about was for top military brass and certain congressional, but the fact that there were three discs at that exhibit, these discs were hovering off the floor without any visible means of support. They were referred to as alien reproduction vehicles.
So if they have that, they probably could. This is old stuff. This is stuff made back in the early 50s and stuff, these alien reproduction vehicles. Mark sat down with me in a lobby in Washington, and he went over because I have an electronics background. He showed me how the Tesla coil worked and the pulse for the mercury vape and the capacitors on the bottom. And the whole thing started with a deep cycle battery that would, start up. And then this thing would, squeeze the electrons off into, faster than light operation. I didn't really comprehend the entire thing, but the idea was this was 1950s stuff. So you can kind of imagine what they've got now.
So, Len, do you think they're all about doing a false flag event, that they're kind of fake an alien invasion so that they can up the budget and justify where they're spending all this black money?
I know that's a popular opinion right now, but I just don't think they're going to be able to do that and pull it off. Although I do know they have tremendous technology. They have holography that can convince a lot of people that it's real. I just don't think they're going to be able to pull that off. It's just technologically too difficult, although they do have the capabilities. What do you think, Dan?
I don't know, but I know they've got advancement that is mind-boggling, I think. It's probably the word. I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know whether to be an activist or just go into, a flower of life meditation and, try to, activate the grid, in a morphogenic way. It seems like that's much, much better path than, trying to, work at this from, other than, doing a radio show once in a while. Hopefully, you never know who's listening out there and might say the right thing to the right person, and maybe somehow, click, 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 these things start to expand out, and maybe we can shift this whole thing, because the path that it's going, the way the corporations are controlling, when I say corporations, I mean the elite secret government that's controlling the corporations that are going, everything's going in the path that it is, and we have the, as some say, we have the best government money can buy, So.
Yeah, exactly.
How do we break this loop with the industrial military complex and the corporations? That's the big question,
Well, maybe the big influence, the benevolent ones that are sitting out there watching this whole thing unfold, maybe they haven't really shown up yet. Maybe they're just kind of letting it, come to this point of fruition. Because if they act too soon, then, maybe it just kind of plays into their hands. I don't know. On the other hand, you made a good point about the flower of life meditation and becoming aware and awake and all that. I believe at the end of the day, human consciousness plays a large role in this. Right, there's a point at which even in marketing, we really don't know what's going to happen. When a product hits the market, you just kind of roll the dice. I mean, you take all your customer surveys and your research and development, and you put it out there, and the next thing you know, your product's for sale in big lots. But every once in a while, some really strange thing happens. This fever takes hold. These people, humans, get a desire to have a certain thing. And then it goes viral. It just explodes with everybody wanting to have it. This kind of consciousness is uncontrollable by any government, by any force. And if the human race could awaken to the point where we desire peace and not to go forward into the galaxy under a warlike footing, believe me, we'll have peace.
I love your insight on that, Brooks. I'm with you 100% on that. I just would like everyone to know that, you know, if you think about it, that's pretty much where I'm putting my bets, is that, you know, there will be an advanced civilization that is benevolent, that is more powerful than whatever bad guys are out there that happen to have advanced technology from off-planet cultures, if there are any.
Let me see if I could be a little more blatant with this, because we were talking about this in the first hour, and it's a perfect time to throw it in here. I maintain that these, you know, ultra intelligences that are out there that were waiting to arrive in great light ships and show us the way are no different than us. We are the advanced civilization. We just forgot who we are. Right. We just need to remember.
Yes.
I think that's true. I think that's true, and I did put that in the book about the potential of the human race. But how do we raise our consciousness? So who's going to help us raise our consciousness at this point, other than the extraterrestrials? I mean, it's no other way it's going to happen.
Well, we should not limit ourselves such, Lynn. There are ways it can happen, and lights are going on here and there, little radio programs like X Squared Radio. We only have about 20 million visitors a week, but it grows. Most of our listeners listen by archive because they're doing something else on Sunday nights. But there are a couple hundred thousand people out there all over the world listening to what we're saying right now. They don't participate much, but I get mail from them, and they buy books, and they listen to what we're talking about, and they act on it. So if you guys are willing to hang around another hour, I think we could take this to the next level.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Let's take a quick break. Some appropriate music from, I think the Alice Band would be good. We'll play after the Gold Rush. We'll be right back in about 2.5 minutes with more X Squared Radio and our guests.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archer split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned-up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship flying in the yellow haze of the sun.
There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one. All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
X Squared Radio coming to you live from southern Mississippi tonight. It's about 45 degrees outside. It's going to be beautiful and sunny tomorrow night. As you go out tomorrow night, I want you to remember to look up, because tomorrow night is going to be a full lunar eclipse, 1:30 Eastern time. So if you're in your respective time zone, keep in mind it doesn't take long for this to happen. Believe me, there's nothing on the silver screen at 1:30 in the morning. So get yourself your favorite nourishment, liquid or otherwise. Go out at night. Stay warm and watch this lunar eclipse. Happens to happen, folks, on the winter solstice. Hasn't happened for a long, long time. If you miss it, you got to wait till 2094. I don't plan on being around then, but you might. Best thing to do is just go out tomorrow night and enjoy it. Also, don't forget, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is available at rememberingthefuturebook.com. If you buy it from the website, you will not only get the hard copy autographed, but you'll also get the audio version download for free. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. rememberingthefuturebook.com. We'll see what we can do to still get it to you by Christmas if you order this week. As you prepare for the winter, don't forget to visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com. Put yourself together a winter kit for your automobile in case you get stuck in traffic through no fault of your own, I'm sure. At least you'll be able to take care of yourself, maybe a couple of motorists around you, and you will not be a burden to the emergency services crews out there. My guest tonight is Len Kasten. He's the author of an outstanding book. It's more than a compilation, The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. You think you know it all. I thought I knew quite a bit till I read this book. It puts everything in a chronological order and perspective, all in one book. Very easy to read, very well written, Bear Publishing. And my other guest is Dan Willis. He is a Disclosure Project witness. He is at least a mental activist and a darn interesting guy. He's contributed a lot of clips to us tonight, and we're glad to have both of them on X Squared Radio, final hour. Welcome back, both of you.
Nice to be back.
Pleasure being with you, Brooks.
Now, in this hour, I mean, we've talked about the military-industrial complex. We've talked about the press and how it's controlled or suppressed or doesn't really give a rat's behind. But in this hour, we're going to talk a little bit about the psychic discoveries revisited. Something is going on with the human race. We've got this neural network that's tied us all together for the last 12 years. We're just now figuring out how to use it really well. And, of course, we've abused it about as hard as it can be abused for the last 10 years. But it is bigger than the library at Alexandria. It has all the knowledge of the world. And believe me, only half of it can be accessed through Google. The rest of it you have to actually know the address to get to. But the knowledge is out there, and those with the intellect and the drive and the desire to know can accumulate knowledge faster than any university can pump it into their brains. In fact, the textbooks and the professors that populate every university from coast to coast is already obsolete compared to the knowledge that's on this internet, if you can access it, assimilate it, and put it together. I think, it's my opinion, and I'll put this to you, Len, that there are individuals, perhaps groups of individuals, maybe even small populations scattered across the planet that do have the ability to pull all this together and remember what they can do with it. What do you think?
I do think that's probably true, especially in view of what Google has just done with this cloud. They have every single book in print now available in the so-called cloud, which is unbelievable. However, I think we're entering an age now where knowledge alone and logic alone is not the solution. I think we've really got to move up one octave to what might be more of an intuitive level, and to, or you may say psychic, intuitive, whatever, where things are just grasped without knowledge, but understood without knowledge, and that, I think, is what comes with higher consciousness. So I think while knowledge alone and tremendous access to all of this knowledge is great, I think the answer is really above knowledge. I think we're in a whole new realm. We have to be to expand the consciousness.
There's a lot of good tools on the internet, like Brooke's book, which I ordered, which is fantastic, Remembering the Future. I think it's wonderful. I wish I had this available when I was, you know, younger, and I was hungry for information where you could learn by inspiration. You know, you could be driven to understand things by wherever your inspiration, instead of being forced things down your throat, you know, of what you may not or may not be interested in. You know, I think that's what's wonderful about the internet, is that, you know, you can let your cravings for knowledge be satisfied, you know, so long as you can, because there's so much information, and I think you just have to use discernment on what's valid. But I think it is a combination of the consciousness with the information that is valuable, and I think getting this information out so that, you know, people don't just rely on the mainstream media, and that they listen to shows like this to kind of put the dots together so that they know that when things happen, there is another explanation other than CNN.
Well, I was going to say, we have traditionally, or I should say historically, we have relied upon the press for our communication. In the old days, it was the newsreels. That's how we learned about what was going on in the war. And then it was the news at 11. And then in 1991, when, you know, war became not weapons of mass destruction, but weapons of incredible precision, CNN, for the first time, went 24 hours with news. And guess what? People watched it 24 hours. And news has been 24 hours a day ever since. Multiple cable channels now carry news 24 hours a day because people want a continuous stream of information, or so the entertainers think. But what has happened in the last, I would say, 4 years with the internet, hard to believe that there's been changes in the last 4 years, but there have been. We have learned to communicate as a world on a real-time basis using this neural network. Now, this makes a big difference. We're now not getting a stream from talking heads. We're now talking to each other. We're meeting people, our friends, our brothers, our relations, all around the planet, real time, in every language. And we're beginning to exchange thoughts. We're beginning to exchange love and messages back and forth. And this is beginning to break down, I think, the old stinted, I'm somehow separated from everything mentality. We're now realizing that we are incredibly connected to everything, including those visitors from other worlds. And it's my thinking, especially after reading Len's book, especially the latter part of this book, where we're now revisiting all of this old psychic data that we collected the last 70 years, we're remembering that maybe we came to this planet through birth, but they're coming to this planet through ships, and it's not that much different. We just need to remember who we are.
Right. I'm not so sure we originated here, frankly.
I was going to say speak for yourself, Len, but I'm with you there.
Well, you know, that show, Battlestar Galactica, I think had a germ of truth in it, perhaps, that maybe that's really, we came from another planet originally, that we didn't grow up here at all. That we should entertain that possibility.
Well, I think we are. I know in the latest book that I wrote, I wrestled with that chapter. I want you to know, Dan, I left it out, and then I put it back in, and then I took it out, and then finally I put it back in because I thought somebody's out there who feels exactly the same thing that I do. So I'm going to leave this personal chapter, sort of an insert in the book, so people can see how I feel about it. And I don't think there are too many people that feel that much differently. How about it, Dan?
I think you're right on about the aspect that, you know, there's, you know, like things like YouTube, Facebook, you know, all the different mediums out there that are communicating to everyone. People are watching these, you know, inspiring videos or downloading your book and, you know, all types of different tools available that are not normally available, you know, not that many years ago. And I think that they are having an effect. I think that morphogenic, you know, like my wife and I, I was humming a song in my head, and all of a sudden, you know, not saying anything, and all of a sudden she's singing it, you know, across the room, you know. You know, it's a, there's an interesting, you know, you start watching what other people are doing on the web and what they're saying and how they're talking, and it's almost as though we're all one mind coming through different perspectives. And it's almost like, you know, some of the research work I'm doing with water that I stemmed from with Dr. Marcel Vogel when he set up a laboratory, where you just put a small amount of water that's structured into a big vat of water, and all of a sudden it replicates. And I think consciousness is like that. I don't really have a full grasp of the whole thing, but I see a lot of indications that we are all changing.
Well, we've studied this in the industrial environment. Usually I work in manufacturing environments where there's several hundred to several thousand employees working. And, you know, they're extensions of the machines. I mean, we have to admit, we build these plants to accommodate human beings doing replicated work, and we try to control the quality of that work or facilitate the quality of that work so the humans, no matter who's standing at that machine or holding that tool, does it the same way every single time. Because our customers are very sophisticated and they require that level of quality. Now, that being said, we are working with human beings. We are working with individuals with names and personalities and all kinds of stresses and things that are outside of the workplace that affect the quality of that product. And what we discovered from a human resources standpoint is that there are individuals, we call them X-factor individuals, that we can place in certain work cells. There might be 30, there might be 50 employees in a certain cell on a certain shift doing a certain series of tasks. It isn't that they work any faster than anyone else. It isn't that they talk. It isn't that they have anything that they share with anyone else. Just putting them in the cell increases the productivity and the harmony of that cell. We don't know what it is. It isn't that they speak. It isn't that they work. It isn't that they dance or dress a certain way. It's just their presence makes the statistics of that zone increase. And we find them by moving people around, cross-training them, putting them in different sections. It doesn't matter where we put them. If we put them in an office environment, if we put them on a construction environment, we put them in a maintenance environment, it doesn't matter. Even the machines seem to work more smoothly. And we're not sure what it is, but we do know that it exists. There are a handful in every plant. Some have more, some have less. But they're easily found. And it's that way in society as well. Who are these individuals? And what kind of organization could you build if you had nothing but X-Factor individuals in it?
Wow. So this is beyond the 100th monkey concept, actually.
I think we're just starting to understand those fields and how they work. It seems like there's a localized field, what you're saying is like that worker who has a certain mentality and consciousness he's put into with the other workers, and all of a sudden there's a change in the quality of all the workers just by, it's almost like the water, you know, where you put a small amount of very structured water into disorganized water, and the rest of the water comes into alignment with it.
And I brought this up.
It all has to do with that golden mean ratio stuff, you know?
Well, I brought this up specifically because you mentioned that, because we are, at least our biological transducers, are 70% water.
Yes.
And what is it, Dan, that affects the structure of the water?
Well, that goes into a very deep, long, that's another 3-hour show.
But it is consciousness, is it not? You're exposing the water to a certain kind of consciousness. That's what changes the structure of it.
There's a tetrahedral hexagonal matrix.
Psychic powers, some sort of psychic power these individuals have that infects everybody around them, so it seems.
And that's for good or for ill. You can change water into a poison, and you can change it into something very beneficial.
Right, exactly. It does operate.
That's interesting. Water is most programmable at the body temperature at 98.6 degrees.
That's exactly right. So what is it about these individuals that walk through our society? Some are silent and some are very vocal, and they exist in all ages. We can find them in history. When they arrive, things change.
Well, if they're a body of water, you know, like they do with the experiments with water, where they'll affect one vial of water and it'll be near another vial of water, and what happens to one is affected in the other, and it's not sharing the same container. And so each human being could be a container, so to speak. My guess on this is, you know, this is purely speculation on my part, that we live in a matrix that has these geometrical qualities that, in some of the work I did with, you know, the quartz crystals that has this hexagonal golden mean ratio, you know, with a 52-degree angle and everything, that has a synergy with the water molecule, which is also tetrahedral with a hexagonal, that there's something key and fundamental, and it has to do with the golden mean ratio and all this stuff, and we're hardly scratching the surface of science to understand all this, but it appears that each thought that we think almost has like a geometrical quality to it that modulates the brain is mostly made up of water. And so it could be that just like the vials of water, the coworkers are being affected by the productive worker that's being put in place. It's just my speculation on that.
Well, I think you're going in the right direction. And it doesn't necessarily just, you know, stem with factory workers. It also stems with orchestras and baseball teams and kinds of things this works with. Now let's expand this a little bit further, and we're going to pull the whole ET involvement into this, because actually, even though we're individuals walking around in bags of water, we live on what, for all intents and purposes, as far as the Kepler mission has gone, it might be one of the rarest water planets on this side of the galaxy. We have a lot of water, and it's liquid. We are at the golden, well, we're at the optimal distance from the sun, that water is not steam, nor is it frozen ice all the time. But now we have almost 7 billion conscious beings on this planet, resonating whatever it is they're resonating out there in the universe. And we have a planet full of water that's picking it up. Now, how does that change the picture?
Well, is it your opinion that the internet and what it's engendering is going to be the key to higher consciousness on the planet?
Well, I look at the number of years that it's actually been functional as that kind of neural net. I'm going to say 12 years it's been a library. 4 years it's really been that kind of network. In 4 years, what has happened to the consciousness of the planet? Are we really a machine full, a pasture full of sheep that can be manipulated by the press as easily as we could 4 years ago?
Probably not. I agree with that. Things have changed. There's no question about it.
Are we as a race changing? Are we evolving as a race?
Well, I think the WikiLeaks example is a good one because that bypassed the press and the talking heads. And maybe as more of that happens, that's exactly what will lift the consciousness. I don't know. It does sound like it could happen that way.
Well, for the record, the press wasn't bypassed. The whistleblowers sent all that stuff to the press. They just threw it away. And WikiLeaks has done a great service by shining light into the dark corners where the dark deeds have been done. And now those that are standing there with their underpants down around their ankles are mad about it. But, you know, they should be mad about the fact that they did the deed, not the fact that the news got out.
Yeah, it's interesting how they spin that, you know, where the choice of words and the how they talk about him is like, oh, we have these security leaks that are going out every day, you know, it's like, this could, you know, jeopardize lives and everything like that. But they're not focusing on the fact that we've got a corrupt situation here that needs to be addressed and changed. They don't bring that into focus.
Well, I feel the same way that Julian Assange does here. People can have secrets. Governments cannot.
Well, they do
it's
seem to get away with
that.
Having them, though, don't they? I mean, didn't Obama more or less promise us a transparent government? It never did really happen, did it? I mean, how can we ever really be sure that we have a transparent government? It's not going to happen, I don't think.
And how can secrecy be assured that it's not going to be abused, you know, just like the unacknowledged special access projects where we have these projects where the president's denied or anybody inquiring into it, they're sent off into a different direction, so throw them off, but they continue on operating, taking in, you know, billions or who knows, trillions of dollars, operating completely with no oversight.
You're talking about the Black Project?
Well, I mean,
even
the president of companies doesn't know what goes on in his company. I mean, the CEO of BP has no idea what goes on in an oil rig. And the president is the biggest temp of them all. He's the spear catcher. He's the guy that goes out and, you know, makes all the speeches and pretty much does what he's told. And we got it from here, Obama. Go ahead, take another vacation. You know, this president is a complete non-issue. Even in Washington, he's completely obfuscated. Even in Congress by first-termers, there's no respect whatsoever for the White House right now. It's a complete lack of leadership, which suits the bureaucracies just fine. They like it when there's a political one-upmanship going on and squabbling on the floor. They love it because they can just go wild and spend all the money they want and nobody's even watching.
Not good
it could be that because so many voices are heard from on the Internet, that has an equalizing effect. That has a way of releasing secrets because so many opinions can be compared quickly that you can come to a pretty good appreciation of the truth that way. That could be the reason. That could be the secret, because anyone can send in a Twitter or a an email, and all of a sudden it's on the news. And somebody says, well, yeah, that's right. That's a better way of looking at it. And before you know it, I think you basically get closer to the truth that way.
Well, yeah, when you have the press telling you it's a 100,000-man march, and you have the internet with thousands and thousands of photographs on there that clearly shows it's a million-man
yeah.
march,
right.
When are you going to believe the press again? Never.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. So that's
yeah, you have to wonder about the opinion polls on that, too, you know, the what the perceived of what the masses are thinking, you know.
Well, it's like
can you really trust the pollsters,
an official.
You know?
Yeah, it's like an official standing at the microphone saying, look, 80% of Americans do not believe in UFOs. There's no such thing. Meanwhile, someone in the audience has their webcam running, and there's a UFO right over the guy's shoulder.
Exactly. So I think you're right when you started out the program by saying that we're graduating beyond the talking heads and the pundits to a whole new way of looking at things, thanks to the internet, and it is making a big difference. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I know we have groups out there like Anonymous, which Len, go ahead. You're a journalist, so tell us what Anonymous is.
You talking about the person that gave it the Serpo story?
Yeah, the Anonymous is like its own leaderless group of hackers from all over the world that releases information everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't know too much about
in fact,
that.
In fact, if they have somebody... Yeah, well, I mean, what's to know? They have any time an individual tries to assume leadership by some charisma or whatever, they're immediately shot down. Anonymous is by nature a chaotic, you know, soup of hackers and brains from all over the country, and they've got themselves patched and cross-patched around the planet, and I don't think they're alone, where literally they cannot be shut down. Even if the servers, the plugs were pulled on the servers, it would still live on. And I think that's where we're going with it. I don't think it can be controlled by China. I don't think it can be controlled by Obama's new Emergency Powers Act over the internet, where he says he can pull the plug or he can censor it at any time that he wants to, like maybe right before an election. but what I do see is that there's a correlation here. And I think us three are as qualified as anyone on the planet to make this revelation. That the presence of the ETs, the presence of Earth, the planet, the presence of the 7 billion alive people here, sentient beings on the planet, and the presence of the internet is no coincidence. That this is all occurring because we as a race, as a planet, are evolving.
Yeah. It is surprising that the powers that be would let us have this tool, isn't it? When they could shut it down, really, if they wanted to. That always surprised me that they're letting us have this super communication.
Thank you, Al Gore.
Yeah, the major pipeline owned by the telecoms. In fact, an ex-business partner was a commander in the Navy SEAS and Office of Naval Intelligence. He was telling me about this facility under up by Miramar, where they have this huge water cooler computers and the whole internet's running through at least one big giant branch, you know, so there's no delay at all. But, you know, the government kind of owns the internet in a way, you know, so.
Well, it was DARPA. Wasn't it DARPA that started?
Yeah.
Right.
DARPA.
Yeah, it was the Watts. It was called the Watts line. We used it in the early 70s. It was a way of all the bases and government agencies communicating real time.
Right.
But they're building another one up in Moses Lake, Washington, and I'm watching them build it. It's they've been offered cheap electricity, 3 cents a mil for the next 20 years. They have air-conditioned vaults. It's earthquake-proof. And I think it's just about done. I think it's just about finished. Microsoft has got billions tied up in the thing.
Well, I think we are graduating to a new level of consciousness. And I think it does have a multiplication, an exponential effect, that it happens faster and faster. I think if you read Carl Johan Kalman's book on the transformation, 2012 and the transformation of consciousness, he more or less predicted this. He said that we're in now in the era of galactic consciousness. And in February of 2011, we're going to enter the era of universal consciousness because things are accelerating so quickly. Have you read that book?
Yeah, well, this is... No, I haven't, but I subscribe to that, and I believe that the buyer, the economic driver, is becoming very sophisticated. And as much as the press wants to tell us that investors are scared and they're putting their money in, you know, low-yield, low-risk investments, the truth is that the money's been vacuumed out of the system by the banks. They've simply taken trillions of dollars out of our money system and shipped it elsewhere. So the money just isn't in our system to move. But I can tell you that the consumer world is very sophisticated and will no longer stand for PlayStation 1 to be played out as long as it is economically feasible until PlayStation 2 is released. They're demanding PlayStation 4 right now. And if they're demanding it, somebody's going to build it. It's kind of like we're sitting here with electric cars. I've had a factory ready to build electric cars for well over a year. It was ready to crank cars out in November of last year. And the fact that funding has been kept away from it means that those electric cars are not coming off the assembly line and hitting the showrooms where the customers want them. But customers want them, and there will be a way for them to come out, and no one's going to stop it.
And didn't they squelch the Chevy Volt way back in the 70s? Was it 70s or 80s that they had it running, and people loved it?
It was the early 90s. It was called the EV1, but that was a really primitive version. Now, but still, the Volt is six-year-old technology. The technology that's sitting on manufacturing floors like ours and Fiskars and Kodas and Zens. This is this year's technology. This is way, way, way more advanced than those vehicles. Much more affordable, much more efficient.
Well, I know we had anti-gravity operating in 1983 because the B-2 bomber did have it built in. And so we could, if we had turned that technology over to commercial aviation in 1983, we would be well on our way to being independent of foreign oil at this point. So we've had all this amazing technology. They've just kept it under wraps, and they release it, dribble it out when they choose to, based on political or economic advantage.
And you have to think about the difference between Earth technology, where we put together things with rivets, and even our best science, which has got to be pretty amazing by now, compared to the ET technology, where, you know, when they look at the inside of the craft, it's all smooth. There's no seams. Nothing connects, with anything. And, you know, there must be an understanding. You know, the way when I was working with Dr. Vogel, he got a sample of some metal, and we're looking at it in an electron microscope, and there was this micro machining that could nowhere on Earth we could do that. It was this incredible structuring that was going on, and I think in the future, you know, the way science is going, we're going to be growing things to do functions, and these functions can possibly have a consciousness in them that perform a certain, you know, very basic function. And it seems that's the way the ETs have evolved, because the crafts in which they connect with have its own consciousness. Not that I'm not any authority on the subject, but, you know, you can see there's a... it's almost as though they have an understanding of how to bring out of the primordial matter the substance that they need in order to form these these craft or different vessels that they use. And there's a whole different understanding of science. But, you know, my God, look at us in the last 200 years, you know.
Well, some of the robots that are created by some of the ETs, from what I've been able to determine, really do seem to have a form of consciousness. I don't know how they do it. It does seem to be possible. It's primitive.
Well, I don't think it's that foreign to human beings. We know whether it's a lathe or whether it's, you know, a 2010 Mustang. Machines have personalities, and we interact with our machines.
So right on. Yes, absolutely.
I used to do a computer repair in
San Diego, and I had several clients, and it was interesting how people operate with their computers. There was this one client that this other technician was taking care of, and whenever he left, the machine would malfunction. He ended up taking a Polaroid photograph and taping it on the inside of the machine, and then it worked fine all the time. Interesting link.
That's funny. Yeah, it's you know, I laid hands on a 59 Ford one time, and it just ran perfectly. When I was a maintenance mechanic, people would say, like, my car is having trouble. I said, well, let's go for a ride. And we'll go for a ride. They said, it's not doing it now. Well, I know. That's because I'm in the car. But, you know, describe to me what it was doing, and we'll finally figure out what it is. And I can tell you that, you know, a clean, waxed car is faster. It feels better, you know, and that's why we have a relationship with our cars. I tried to explain that to an officer one time. He just didn't understand, but that was supposed to be a joke. I said, you know, you're really coming in between a relationship that I have with my automobile here. And we don't drive 55, okay? This relationship evolves at about 85 miles an hour. You're getting in the way of that relationship. He didn't understand. I believe that you know, we have about 10 minutes, and then we've got to let our next host come on to this station. We're at station 2 on BBS Radio. BBS Radio is the largest internet radio network on the internet anywhere in the world. And X Squared Radio is usually number one, sometimes number one, number two on that network. So we appreciate you listening to X Squared Radio. We appreciate you listening to the BBS Radio Network. It's free, live. It always will be. We will never censor anything. And we hope that no profanity goes out over the air. But if it does, you know, it's free airwaves. The archives are not free. You can subscribe anytime by going to xsquaredradio.com. Click on the subscribe today link. It's $2.50 if you want to listen to everything we got in 30 days. But I don't think you can listen to 1,000 hours of content in 30 days. It might take a year. So a yearly subscription is a mere $20, less than a bag of popcorn each month. You can enjoy interviews like this one and many others for now 5 years on the BBS Radio Network, X Squared Radio. And we appreciate you taking part in our archives and as a subscriber very much. And don't forget to visit our affiliates. My guests tonight have been, for the last 3 hours, Len Kasten. He's the author of The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, Advanced Technology and the Coming New Race by Bear Publishing. If you want to get a copy, you can get it autographed probably at et-secrethistory.com. If not, you want to get it the fast way, get it before Christmas, give it as a gift. Buy it anywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Borders, Walden Books, B. Dalton Bookstores, everywhere where fine books are sold. My other guest for the last 2 hours has been Dan Willis. He's part of the Disclosure Project, a former radio man with the Navy. And I believe Dan has some products out there. Dan, have you got a website?
I don't make anybody anything. But I don't have a web. I have a number of websites, but nothing that I sell anything. But I just want to say I appreciate all that you do in helping shift this morphogenic field for books.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm a both a spectator and a participator. I had an instructor one time that said, you know, there's many different kinds of taters out there. There's spectators and there's participators, and I've never been able to say the word right since. So, sorry about that, but it was a really good class. you know, I get involved and I try to be objective sometimes, but sorry about the subjectivity that comes through. And sometimes the energy, but that's okay. You know, we're out on the front lines. We're doing it. It bothers people like us when people say it can't be done when we're sitting there doing it. So, in fact, we like being told it's impossible because we kind of specialize in that here at X Squared Radio. And it's a pleasure having guests like this on, like Dan. Dan's always a pleasure to have on the program because he's always upbeat, always doing some kind of research or another, and lives off the grid and really does, in spirit, what we should be doing as a planet, moving more toward harmony with the planet. And I appreciate you, Dan.
Oh, I appreciate you, too. I do have a URL, Matrix of Life Tech, TECH.com. It's our water research that we're doing.
Excellent, excellent. Len, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. I'm up there, but I'm back on now.
Yeah, well, it's the wonder of internet radio.
Yeah.
We have about 10 minutes left. We've talked about the evolving of the human race and the fact that perhaps the presence of the ETs with the level that they're comfortable being public. I mean, they haven't done a mass landing yet because they don't want to do a mass landing yet.
Exactly.
But they could anytime they want.
Right.
Maybe they're being just as present as they want to be. And that might be frustrating for some, but I think they have our best interests in mind. If they were hostile, I think they'd do something else. What do you think?
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. I think the overwhelming majority of them are not hostile. I think there are some hostile groups out there, but most of them are not. I think they're waiting.
Well, I think the idea.
I think they're waiting before they would do a mass landing. I think they're waiting for us to achieve a certain level of change, and
yep.
That's up to us, really.
Waiting for us to remember who we are, probably.
Yeah,
like,
because
hey,
for
you
them
guys,
to change,
wake up.
For them to change things so drastically by a mass landing, there would have to be some sort of receptivity on our end. And if that doesn't exist, they're not going to do it.
Well, I had a feeling 4 years ago that there would be a global first contact in 4 years. I was thinking 2010, 2011. We're really going to see not just a flyover, but a door open, handshake out, hello, we're here, right on the news.
Mm-hmm. But you do agree that right now we're still under the control of what is called the Illuminati or the world banking system. And so for them to land with us still under that control, it just wouldn't work. I think they're waiting until we make some changes in world society.
They've been here for thousands of years, you know. Right. Not that long ago, we didn't have anything more than musket shooters, you know. So, if they wanted to wipe us out, they could have done it. So, I'd say if something comes in with laser beams blasting cities, I would think about Dr. Cal Rosen's warning from Wernher von Braun.
Which was?
Yeah, which is that it's a hoax made in USA alien invasion, you know, for the sake of, you know, gaining this one world against an enemy foe that they can build up the industrial military complex once they ran out of enemies.
That's a popular well, opinion now. Yeah, I'm hearing that from a lot of different people. Could be true.
Len has a picture of the giant tunnel boring machine, and there are several of them out there operating. And there's a strong contingent that says that the military, or at least the leadership of the world, has very elaborate, very well built and stocked underground bases. And those of us out here on the internet waves, and we've said many times in this program, I think we should just encourage them to relocate to their underground bases, close the door, and let us take it from here.
Well, Dr. Michael Wolff said that the under Area 51 is a base the size of Rhode Island. So that's all I know about
well,
that.
They should move to it, get in it, play old movies, and let us take it from here.
That sounds like a good solution to me.
That way they'll have the world they want, which is all every luxury item that they can think of. They'll have their genetically pure race under there with lots of room to grow and leave the rest of the world to us.
Yeah. Well, that could happen because they're expecting the surface to be a problem when these big solar flares start hitting. So who knows?
Well, let's just convince them consciously that the solar flares are coming. And then as they arrive, we will consciously extinguish the flares and let them believe that the entire surface of the world is uninhabitable for the next 200 years.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
it would make a good movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Spielberg might have that
it's
on
like,
his sleeve next.
It's like knowing with a wink.
Yeah.
You know, we know.
Yeah, we all need to work on ourselves. Trying to fight that mentality is futile. You know, I totally in agreement with both of you. I think that, you know, we just need to come to a place where we can even relate to off-planet cultures, you know, advanced society. I'm sure they run their planets a lot differently than we run ours.
I think that we can join extraterrestrial. I think we can join extraterrestrial society once we've just made a few advances in consciousness. I think we'll be there. Not that far off.
Well, maybe we should just become the extraterrestrial society.
Yep. Yeah. That's one solution.
They are us. All right, gentlemen, we are out of time. I've had an awesome time tonight on Expert Radio. I hope you two have as well.
I really enjoyed
listening
it,
to your books about this.
excellent. I will. This will be up on the archives in about 2 hours. It takes me a little while to mix it down and get it up. It'll be available at xsquaredradio.com. I'll send you guys a link to it so you can send your friends to it, and we'll carry on. You guys have a wonderful week. Len, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for the book.
I will
definitely tell others about it.
And
Dan, you're welcome. Welcome anytime. Just keep sending me notes, and we'll bring you on for updates as often as you like.
I love talking to you about all this. This is wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And if you have any questions about the book, be sure to send them to me. I answer everybody. I got a lot of mail there at the beginning, and I guess I satisfied them, so now it's down to a trickle. But I love talking about it, so just let me know. All right, gentlemen, have an awesome week, and we will talk to you another time. Thank you so much for being on X Squared Radio.
Thank you.
Good night. X Squared Radio signing off. Earth Explorers, we'll be back maybe not on the 26th. We might run an archive. Depends on how carried away the grandkids get with what's under the tree. So Hang in there. Have a wonderful rest of the year. And if we don't see you till the first Sunday of 2011, peace, Earth Explorers. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.